As we started out last week, I want to do just a very brief recap from last week. We have some additional people in that weren't here, and so we'll do a real brief recap, and then get into the heart of this. This is the lesson for me that I don't really want to teach, but I have to teach. And I say that because our first lesson was designed with basic introductory information, and then the home as God designed it to be. Now, what we get once we get through our introductory stuff and our recap, we're going to talk about what man has done to the home. That's why I say it's not exactly enjoyable for me to teach that, but necessary. The home, which is the family unit, marriage, is the first of three God-ordained institutions. The home was designed to meet mankind's physical, emotional, and social needs. The governments of men are designed to meet man's civil needs, in other words, laws by which we conduct ourselves so there isn't chaos. And then, of course, the church is designed to meet mankind's spiritual needs. And I made a point of saying this last week, and I'll do it again. Even though the home came first, really, when you look at it, the home in the infinite mind of God, because God isn't bound by time, the home is actually patterned more after the church. And we'll talk about that here in just a moment. The home is that structure or social structure in which we receive the most intimate support, the most individual support, and the institution in which we can offer the most social support, that individual support. A new home, as we learn from Genesis chapter 2 and verse 24, is when man leaves his father and mother to become one flesh with his wife. Marriage is a contract. We talked about that. And unfortunately, and we'll get more into this as we get into our class, our specific class material, is where we have a contract between, not just between man and a woman, but as it should be, between God, because it is His institution that He set up. And all too often we find ourselves running into problems with that, is that people only see this as a contract between two human beings. They don't even consider, and I'd say for the most part in the world today, even though people may go through what we think in terms of as kind of a traditional marriage ceremony, and whoever is officiating will usually say something to what God has joined together, let not man separate. In their minds, people aren't thinking like that, unfortunately. Unfortunately, people are thinking like, well, this is between me and this man that I'm marrying, or this woman that I'm marrying. So that's one of the things where we find the failures sometimes in our marriage relationships. It is important for man and woman to recognize that covenant relationship that they have, not just with each other, but with God. And we drew that triangle last week on the whiteboard. We won't do that. That we had God at the top of the pyramid or triangle, and we had the man and the woman on the bottom corners. And anytime you break one of those lines, Your ability to keep that relationship together like God intended it to be becomes weakened. It fails. So whether it's the man who breaks that line between God and himself, or the woman does, it weakens the entire relationship. And I think really when you look at this, that's probably at least one of the major factors in our divorce rate, and we'll talk about that here in just a moment. The divine blueprint for the home, this is what God intended for the home to be. We talked about this last week. It says that God made, literally the word formed, yasar, in the Hebrew, and I'm not a Hebrew scholar, so if I pronounce that wrong, bear with me. He first formed Adam, the first man. Genesis chapter 2 and verse 7 says that the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed in his nostrils the breath of life, and he became a living soul, the idea of a living being. And we talked about the fact that this is a comment or statement that is made only about mankind. While God created all of the animal life that we have on earth, your horses, your dogs, your cats, whatever you want to think in terms of, he did not talk about them being created in this sense. This is this unique relationship that man has with God. But man lacked a proper helpmate. We learned that in Genesis chapter 2, 18 and 20. There, he could go through and he could name all the animals, all the things, the creation that God made. And yet, when it was all said and done, Adam did not have that perfect helper in this world. So what did God do? Genesis chapter 2 and verse 21 caused a deep sleep to come upon Adam. He took a rib. And by the way, that word rib comes from a Hebrew word, salah, that literally means the side. And we talked about that just a little bit. Now, we've all heard this before, but I think it's good for us to at least remind ourselves of this. I don't think it was an accident that God chose the rib, the side of a man, to create or to form his wife, the perfect counterpart to man. Because we talked about the idea that while Eve was made of that rib, she was not made of a foot bone. Now, what do I mean by that? A bone structure out of your foot that man was supposed to walk upon her. That a man was supposed to mistreat a woman. That somehow she was less than a man. In fact, you can go and you can look into our Middle Eastern cultures, and Islam is one of those you can look at. Where is the woman in public? Always behind the man. Never side by side with her husband. Always back behind. Lesser of a person in their mind's eye. But we also made a point that the woman wasn't made from a bone out of the head of a man. Why? Because she was not to rule over the man. So I think it's just absolutely perfect picture of a husband and wife who are side by side in life. So that's kind of the structure of the home. We see that Eve is presented to Adam, and he makes a pronouncement, and that pronouncement was, "This is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh." This tells you something about the relationship that God expected husbands and wives to have. Not independent, you go your way and do your thing, I'll go my way and do my thing. Not to say you can't have time away from each other, but I'm just saying this was the idea, was to go side by side in life, to be one with another. And really, when you stop and think about it, doesn't Jesus affirm this concept when we read in Matthew chapter 19, verses 4 through 6? Let's look at that real quickly. And remember what the circumstances were. It says in verse 1, "Now it came to pass when Jesus had finished these sayings that he departed from Galilee, came to the region of Judea beyond Jordan, and a great multitude followed him, and he healed them there. And the Pharisees also came to him, testing him." Now here's the setup, if you will. "Testing him, saying, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason?" Look at Jesus' response here. He affirms exactly what we learn in the book of Genesis. "He answered by saying, have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother, be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So then they are no longer two, but one flesh. And therefore what God has joined together, let not man separate or put asunder." King James rendering on that. So he does that. Jesus put his stamp of approval on the idea of a marriage. When he was at the wedding feast of Cana, John chapter 2, that was him showing his approval of this idea to be joined, a man with a woman. Now, having set that up, what we talked about last week, let's talk about just a little while what man has done to God's blueprint for the home. And that's the sad part. This is the part that's hard to talk about, because we see so many problems in marriages today. And the primary reason goes back to that triangle, doesn't it? We have God who institutes marriage, the home, and you have husband and wife, or man and woman, and they join in this thing called marriage, but they don't take God into account. They don't look to God for their answer, for their directions and things. Man has chosen, in my estimation, to circumvent what God has set out. And first, let's talk about the idea of completely circumventing the whole thing, the whole idea about living in marriage, with the idea of living together. How many people in here have heard somebody, at least somewhere down the line, make a statement to the effect of, well, you don't really need to get married. I mean, that's just a piece of paper. What I think we probably all have heard that. Now, it may have been secondhand. You may have said, you may have been talking to somebody, and they may have said, hey, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day, and that's what they were saying. They think marriage is just a matter of a piece of paper. And so what that does is it allows them to cohabitate. Because after all, I don't love you any less because we don't have a piece of paper. I don't think anything less of you. I'm still going to treat you right, even though we don't have a piece of paper. And this argument is that this piece of paper is not needed to validate their love and commitment one for another. And I find it interesting, at least from my perspective, as I was thinking about this, trying to put some of these thoughts together for this class, it is a curious thing to me that we live in a society that is increasingly requiring more and more and more documentation, physical contracts for this and that, that when it comes to marriage, all of a sudden, well, it's just paperwork. Now, here's a suggestion. If the time will come for all of us. If you haven't yet, probably will. Go try to buy a home. And when you go to the bank, go to the mortgage company, whoever you're going to, just tell them that you're not interested in all this paperwork. I need to borrow a couple of $100,000 for a home, but let's forget this paperwork stuff. I mean, it doesn't mean anything. But the idea is that we have the notion that piece of paper really does mean something. Now, we even talked about the uniqueness of certain things. There's nothing in the Bible that said, here are the words that you're supposed to use. Here is the piece of paper that you're supposed to use. But there is, even within our society, the idea of commitment on things. And we talked about, remember, if you were not here last week, we even talked about an expression called jumping the broom. How many people have heard that? Jumping the broom. You know what that meant? Originally, I've gone back and I've re-researched it, and what it really goes back to was originally in the early ages of America and the slavery of African Americans. Because, see, they weren't considered legal citizens. They weren't considered people who had rights of any kind. And therefore, when they chose to get married, that's what they would do. They would lay a broom down and they would jump over the broom. And it was a sign or a symbol that they were joining themselves under a household. Right. This got taken even further down the line whenever you had the, in the days of, let's just call it pioneer America, in which people would go out and make, make these long pilgrimages to go out to let's just say something like the Oklahoma land rush or farther than that. They're going to Oregon or they're going to California. And they didn't necessarily have a quote, preacher that was along with them on one of these excursions. Very seldom anybody go by themselves. So they carried that tradition along with them. That was not an uncommon thing. But in virtually every society, we have had what we would think in terms of as traditional ways to show that you're married. Here comes man's law, and we have what we know now today as a marriage license. You go down to, I guess, the courthouse still, and you fill out the necessary information, and then whenever they issue that, then you go get married, and it has to be signed off of and sent back, and they put their notary seal on there, and everything is legalized, so to speak. But the idea that we live in a society that people want to circumvent things. How about this one? Common law marriage. And why not? Yeah, I mean, come on now. We've been living together for the past 10 years. I don't even know what common law is in Texas anymore.
I think it's 3 or 6 months.
Pardon me?
I think it's
6 months. Wow, that's shorter than I thought it would have been. Okay, so you stop and think about that. And what people do is, well, if we just live together for 6 months or a year, whatever it happens to be in the state that they're in, then we're recognized as, we're just married. It's just like somehow it doesn't really matter that God is the one who established things. It's kind of that mindset that says whatever we want to do. So we look at this and we realize that man has begun to do some things to that home, to that initial establishment of a home, and that is through marriage. What's the next one that we all jump and think about? How about divorce? You know, I think mankind, humanity, people in society, seems to see divorce for just about any reason as a convenience, if you will, to rupture that marriage bond, to completely sever it. You realize that in America that our divorce rate hovers around 50%. Now, what that does not mean, I think this is important to understand, it does not mean that if you had 1 million marriages in this country in 2018, that by the time that year cycle was over with, that half of those people would be divorced. That's not what it's talking about. It's talking about over the total time of marriage. Some people may live and be married together for 40 years. Then all of a sudden, somebody just up and decides, I just don't like her anymore. The kids are gone now. We've all heard this one before. It is, well, you know, we stayed married we because of the kids. The children, you know, they needed both parents there. Well, the truth of the matter is, those children, though they may be grown now, still need to see their mother and dad married and working things out. So what that really means when talking about 50% doesn't mean that 500,000 divorces are going to take place within that first year, but it means over the course of time, you're going to start seeing, some marriages may last that 1 year. Some marriages may last 10 years, 5 years, whatever the case may be. And let me just throw this out at you as a possibility. I think as we look around the world that we live in today and seeing how much things have changed with the attitudes of divorce. Now, let's throw Hollywood out of this, okay? Because we understand some of those people, and when I say Hollywood, I'm just talking about celebrities in general. Their idea of commitment is when you get married, if they get married. But when you get married, hey, things aren't working so well, and it's only been 6 months. Throw it out. We're done. It's an amazing thing when you hear or read about somebody that was part of the celebrity and Hollywood scene, if you will, that they've actually been married for 30 years, 40 years. Who was that? Paul Newman and his wife, like before he passed away, they were well into their 30, 35, 36 years, something like that, in marriage. It's an amazing thing. But what I am looking at here is not so much that, but this is just for kind of food for thought. We live in a throwaway society. We really do. I mean, I can remember a time if we had been having a get-together like this, and this is not criticism, folks. It's a reality. That right there would not have been used. And I know all the women are going, man, because I remember those too, because there were piles of dishes and it was always left up to the women to wash the dishes after a meal. That's just reality. That's what it was. But we do live in a throwaway society. And I think sometimes we carry that too far. And when I say we, I'm not talking about us here, not talking about we in the church, though we understand that sometimes those marriages fail also. But in general, we live in a throwaway society. We use it and get rid of it. I don't think it's even possible to find somebody today to come to your house or you bring your flat screen TV to them to work on. You know what's going to happen to that flat screen TV that quits working? It's going to go in the dump. Just reality. I can remember many years ago that I had an uncle who worked for the railroad, Southern Pacific Railroad. Well, their schedule allowed him to have like a whole week off, and then he'd be working for a week and a half or whatever. And he established a TV and stereo repair shop so that when he was home, he had something to do and was making money too. Well, who even has places that do that kind of thing anymore? So we do live in a throwaway society, and this is what concerns me as we begin to talk about and we begin to work through this idea of the home that God would have us to be a part of. And that is that we understand and we see what marriage is designed to be. Go back with me in Matthew chapter 19. Let's notice something here. Because remember what the question was, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason, for any cause? Have you not read, Jesus said, he who made them at the beginning made them male and female. Now that beginning goes back to Adam and Eve. And he said, and for this reason, a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Okay? So then, they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate. And they said to him, why then did Moses command to give a certificate of divorce and to put her away? See, here was their first problem. Moses did not command anybody to do anything of the like. Moses did not command to give a certificate or a statement of divorce to put his wife away. Notice how Jesus responded by this. He says, Moses, because of the hardness of your heart, did what? Permitted you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it was not so. This is the same beginning that we're talking about up here. I've had people try to say, well, but it doesn't go back to Adam and Eve. Well, of course it goes back to Adam and Eve. It's the exact same language from the beginning. So he's saying all the way back to when Adam and Eve were formed, and God had established this concept of a home, of a husband and wife in marriage, making that new home, that new family unit that would come along as a result of it. He said from the very beginning, this is what God intended the home to be. And Moses, because you had stubborn, hard hearts, allowed this to be. He permitted it to be, but that's not what God expected in the beginning. I think that's a really an important factor in this, is that God never intended for that home to be broken up. God never intended for a woman and a man to marry and then somewhere down the line because, well, we just can't work it out. I'm tired of trying. That's one of the old dodges. And I believe me, I've got plenty in my family that went that route. Well, it just wasn't working out. Well, where do you find that in the Bible? You know, how about this? She just doesn't understand. Well, you know what? You probably don't understand either. It's a two-way street. He doesn't pick up his dirty clothes. Mm-hmm. You know, that we can find a million and one reasons if we're looking for a reason to divide that home. We can find a reason. Give yourself an opportunity and you can find it. See, the key with us in this day and age, the world that we live in, is to not be a part of that throwaway society that looks for that reason, but rather that looks for the reason that says, this is what I want to do to keep this together. I want to do my part and make sure that what God joined together, we don't try to destroy. We don't try to put it apart. You know, Jesus says that the husband and wife are what? One flesh. That means you're no longer, it's no longer about Mike only. It's about Mike and Evelyn. It's not about Evelyn only. It's about Evelyn and Mike. And the same thing is true whenever you get married. And again, the idea of not let man put asunder. That word asunder, I really like that better than the New King James, let not man separate. That's my own personal likes. I like the word asunder because it carries with it, to me, a picture. And some of you younger people have never heard the expression before, but the rupture of the marriage bond. And that you stop and think about what you have when something is ruptured. I mean, it shows a picture of violence, doesn't it? You know, when you stop and think about it, isn't that in reality what happens when you end up getting a divorce? It's a violent separation. You know, only once in a while, I guess you can say, well, you know, we're still friends and you know, we married too young. Well, don't blame anybody else on that. Because people get married young all the time and stay married 60 and 70 plus years. So, you know, but there's the problem, is people take that marriage bond so lightly, and then so often it becomes a violent type of situation. I don't mean literally in the sense of fisticuffs or anything between the two parties, but it does tear that union apart. And as we pointed out, Moses suffered it. He allowed it to be so. He permitted it. But again, from the beginning, it was not so. I believe sometimes we have, and I looked this word up, and I don't think it's a word.
Brother Ruth.
Pardon?
Brother Brown.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Reading the book of Deuteronomy, they're quoting Deuteronomy 24, verse 1 on the divorce principle. Well, it's interesting how they use their own law to their own advantage. Well, they also were given permission to establish a king in Deuteronomy 17, but it was never the intent for them to have a earthly king.
Correct.
Hosea 13:11 says, I gave them a king in my anger, and my wrath I took him away.
Okay.
And it's just, again, interesting that the law of Moses was a law of civility. You mentioned that there are three things that God created. Well, the Mosaic economy was just that. It was not only a religious system for them to kind of keep them from sinning.
Correct.
It was also a civil system to keep them under a tax code. They had a dietary system. And so the divorce principle there becomes a principle of civility to keep some order.
Right.
And I'm sorry, I just, the reality that man would say paper isn't important discounts the whole idea of God being a God of a testament, a God of a covenant, a God
That's
of
true.
A book, the book of life. God's keeping an account. He's accounting the faith of Abraham. He's accounting our faith. He's imputing. He's a mathematical God. He's a God of legality.
Yeah.
And so you take all that into consideration with the Bible, it does matter. It matters very much that you make this thing right.
Yeah.
If you want to, anyway.
But that's an excellent point, is because we do have a tendency
to
cheapen what God had planned. It was never God's intent. That's a good word. It was never God's intent that a marriage bond would be broken. Let me just throw something in real quickly on that to add to what Brian just said. What this ought to teach us is how important a marriage relationship is. We should never enter into it lightly. We should never look at it as a convenience. You know, I'm tired of paying all the rent by myself here. You know, my wife can work too, and between the two of us, that's like getting half your rent paid, right? And unfortunately, I think we do. And I say we again, society sometimes looks at it like that. Now, that might be a side benefit to getting married, but that should never be a cause or reason. We ought to be looking at marriage as what God intended it for it to be. One man, one woman for life, with the exception of two things. Number one, death separates. Death ends that relationship. And if it didn't, stop and think about this for a moment. If death didn't end that relationship, the surviving party could never remarry because they'd be guilty of polygamy.
That's right.
Okay, so you'd have that. But what's the other one? Infidelity on the part of one person. Adultery. Other than that, it is designed for once in a lifetime. Make sure that you really want to live with that knucklehead, women. Okay? Make sure that you really want to live with that woman, man, because God's intention.
You gonna call her nothing?
Huh?
You gonna call her something?
Make sure you want to live with that sweetheart.
Okay. There you go, Royce.
My mama didn't raise a pretty boy, but she didn't raise a fool either. But make sure, because it was always designed, and you're right, Brian, when people have a tendency sometimes to use something for their convenience, they'll look at something, well, I can do this if I like. You know, but that's not what God intended it to be from the very beginning. And it is certainly true that we have, I made up a word, I think, casualized. I couldn't find it in a dictionary. I'm going to coin it, and you can use it free of charge. It simply means we make something common. And we've made the marriage bond common. We have casualized the idea of divorce for just any reason. You know, nowadays it really doesn't. You can go get a divorce for anything you like. It doesn't even have to be, well, we weren't compatible anymore. You can just basically go no fault. You know, we have no fault insurance, no fault. divorce nowadays. Yes, Catherine.
I was just going to say, I think the church is guilty of making too loud a marriage too sometimes.
Say a little louder. I'm sorry.
I think the church can be guilty of making marriage a light matter too sometimes, just in basic conversation or young people wanting to get married. And, I mean, I've seen people pressure young people into getting married, or young people wanting to get married that don't fully comprehend exactly what they're going to enter into. It's just as easy, if not, I mean, it's more easy for the world to take it as a light matter, especially when they don't consider the weight of the commitment, and they don't put a lot of weight in their word anymore.
Okay.
Or their oath. But also, I think because we make marriage so common here, and it's, you know, something that we deeply respect and we care about a lot, I think because it's so commonly thought of, spoken of, thought about, that sometimes it just goes over people's heads.
Okay. And maybe the church is, maybe the church is actually failing in an area of having this in the forefront of the minds of our young people. And this goes back to, that goes back to mom and dad at home. You know, are you sure, hon, that you're ready to get married? Or have y'all considered all things? Have y'all talked about what it means? You know, and these types, but the church sometimes, maybe we don't emphasize that enough.
I'm not trying to cast shadow over the efforts that we do put in, because
right.
I believe that we do teach people well. I guess what I was trying to say is that we can view it lighter. Whenever we're talking about it, whether it's from the old to the young or the young to the old, and have such a confidence in what the decision I'm about to make, even though I haven't totally thought it all through.
Okay.
So,
yeah, and again, I think sometimes maybe we, if we're not careful, we get too excited about the idea. Oh, y'all are getting married, and that's good. We ought to be excited when people, you know, when a man and a woman want to be married, and they've gone through the process of thinking things through, understanding what that commitment is, what's going to be involved in it, you should be excited for them. But before we get too excited, are we making sure that that they understand, you know, what is involved? And when we ought to be excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
Good point. Yes, Evelyn.
Kind of piggybacking off of what Catherine is saying, but from a different perspective, and I wonder if it's more cultural than it is actually the church. But I know that just growing up, my view of marriage was there were things that were more important than getting married, like your education. You know, it was drilled in me, get your degree first, get this education first before you get married, as if that superseded, or if that was more important than actually getting married.
Yeah.
And so I think that plays into the casualizing that I used it for free.
Yes.
It's a British word.
It is a British word?
It's good.
Go for it, man.
Well, I think that sometimes our good intentions, because of history past, we take away from the importance of the marriage and the choice that you make in getting married. And now in a society where education and making money deems to be of more importance than actually who you choose to marry.
Okay.
That's the casualizing, I think.
That's an excellent point, yes.
Taking the whole spiritual side out of it.
Right.
God's not involved anymore. And
true.
We, as His children, need to instill that in our children and be sure that young couple, whether they're raised in the church or not, understand that spiritual side of it.
Right.
Because that's where it all stops and starts.
Okay. Yeah, and we do live in a society now. And, in fact, there was something that I was watching just the other day, and it brought out the point, and I think it's an excellent point. It brought out the point that that couples are waiting longer and longer and longer and longer in life before they get married. For what purpose, though? Because their careers were number one. Career became number one. And I think there's got to be a happy balance in there. You know, there's got to be a balance that says, okay, I understand fully what I'm getting involved in marriage and all this thing, but I can, if we want to do, we can make this work together. It doesn't have to be a one or the other. It doesn't have to be, well, I'm not going to get married till I'm 40 years old because that's where I see myself as my peak in my career. It's when I hit about 40 years old, 45 years old. Then the opposite end is how fast can we get to the altar here? Mm-hmm. You know, I can't wait. You know, it's a race. You know what? You're just teenagers, okay? But slow down a little bit. It'll be okay. You know, so yeah, I think that's right. You know, money and career is starting to kind of supersede the marriage bond, and it's a happy balance. I think we can make. Now that I know that's a British word, we have to start using our British accent to say that now. Only kidding. Yes, Garrett.
Going back to what Catherine was saying, though, is that, like, as in the church, we do kind of take it lightly sometimes. But I think where the church is, I don't know if I want to say failing or so, is that there's such contention between brethren on the topic of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure,
when we talk about marriage, someone's got to bring up divorce and remarriage, and it just becomes a contentious topic. And so no one wants to step on any toes, so no one wants to talk to anybody about it.
Yeah.
So no one's willing to work with anybody. And that's what something I love about the congregation here is y'all are family. I've never been to a congregation like that.
Okay.
And so I've grown up, I've always been in a congregation where someone brings something up and the whole congregation starts fighting.
Yeah. Well, and here's a thought on that, is that it is important when we talk about marriage that we talk about what we find, like in Matthew 19, that there is this one reason for a divorce, and only one reason for divorce. But I think if we've got to be honest with ourselves and try to work towards, and this is why I think Garrett's point is we need to work toward the point of saying, okay, let's not just talk about now that you're married, what you can't do, but how do you make that marriage last?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because sometimes we approach it totally from the negative standpoint. Okay, son, you know that when you marry her, that's for life. And if you get a divorce, then, you know, rather than how do I help,
mm-hmm.
you know, and as the body of Christ, how do we help young people to achieve that lifelong relationship as husband and wife? And so sometimes we might do too much in fighting about, I take it like that. Well, I take it like this. Actually, it's not hard to understand. I don't think Jesus made this difficult, but you're right. Sometimes we make it difficult. But I think maybe sometimes we need to work harder in teaching. This is a new home. New family unit, yes.
It'd be a very challenging subject, though, because of the world. Few there be to find it, Jesus said, and the world is so far away from God. So many times they've messed up their lives with the relationship that is naturally drawn between the sexes, male and female. And then they do things, and then 20 years later they're introduced to the gospel.
Yes.
And they find out the truth. And marriage is something that goes back to creation, Adam and Eve. It's not a church ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to explain to people, sadly, that your marriage is not scriptural.
Yes.
You can't repent from that, or the only way you can repent of that is to get out of it.
Get out of it.
And that becomes a very difficult subject, and it will always be difficult because of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's why we've got to be Christians, man. We've got to get out in the world, and we got to try to defeat the enemy.
I'm going to throw something out there just for people's thought before we move on. But when you're looking at someone to marry, a Christian should not just look at somebody and say, well, he or she is a Christian. We need to ask ourselves, that person needs to ask himself, but is that person I'm about to marry a strong, faithful child of God?
Mm-hmm.
Not just somebody who wears a name, because unfortunately sometimes people who wear a name of Christian are not living like that. So, and it's a challenge. You're right, Brian. It really is. Let me move off of divorce for just a little bit. How much time do I have? Oh, man, I've got to hurry. Let me get off that. Just, we had excellent comments, but you know, we have, man, circumvents or I'm going to say perverts God's law on marriage with same-sex marriage now. Now we're into that. And remember, this is the part I didn't like to talk about. Because it's tough. We don't like to talk about things like this. But folks, that's reality now in our society that we're living in. We have a Democratic presidential candidate right now who is living a homosexual life and actually proclaimed that if he's elected, that he's going to bring Christianity to the White House. Okay, how are we going to go about that? You know, but that's the problem that we have here, is that man just seems to have this powerful capacity, for lack of a better way to put it, to mess up what God planned for us. And when you stop and think about what God planned for us, is perfect for us. God never gave us a law or commandment that was bad for us.
That's right.
You simply cannot find one. And so this is what we're faced with now. We noticed that God gave Adam the woman Eve for the perfect complement, both physically and emotionally. Originally, if we want to put it like this, all the quote gay lesbian community wanted was the right to be married, not just have some sort of a legal status. Well, we did that. Almost every state now recognizes, I guess there are a few that don't, but almost all the states recognize same-sex marriage now. Well, what do we have now? Were they satisfied with that? No, because now we have the LGBTQ out there movement. And guess what? The pedophiles now are demanding. What, you know what that would lead to? A grown man marrying a little child. Think about this. And this is how man corrupts things. This is how man destroys things that God started out with that was perfect for man and woman. And what do we do to it? What, and I say, does society do to this? It doesn't. It seems to never end. Our time is really kind of up on this, but here are just a couple of quick passages. What the Bible has to say about that homosexual relationship, and remember that can be male with male, female with female. Leviticus 18:22, Matthew 19:4-6. And somebody says, "Well, wait a minute. He doesn't talk about that." Yes, he does. When he tells us what is commanded and what is accepted in God's sight, that excludes everything else. You don't have to give a whole list of things. You know, that'd be like going out driving down the highway and you see a sign that said the speed limit sign is 75, not 80, not 85, not 90, not 90. You don't see that. Why? Because what is legal has been specified. What the law says is it. Romans 1:24-27 and 1 Corinthians 6:9-10. Any other comments before we close? Any questions or thoughts? Yes?
I want to say this before we close. I wasn't trying to say that the church was doing a bad job of defending, protecting, teaching about appreciating marriage. I just don't want anyone to think that I was.
No, I don't think.
I think we do a really good job.
I don't think anybody took it that way. I do think that you hit on a point that we could be doing better sometimes. I mean,
I think we could, and I'll tell you my judgment opinion is that you got married to Stephen your college together, right? Working together. Nothing wrong with that. Focused. Well, Gina and I got married while we were in school together. She finished occupational therapy school. I worked. Roofed houses. I had lots of jobs, but I provided. Nobody's paying our bills. And then I went to school for 2 years. I raised support. She supported me. She worked. The key to this is commitment. You said that a second ago.
Yeah.
Dedication, commitment. You have to talk. And you two people have to have goals. That goal, you got to stick to it. Work. So marriage is very objective. It's a relationship that teaches you about business. A good household is a business. You learn how to pay bills. You're blowing money going to eat Mexican food and eating. I love Mexican food.
Hey, I was about to say. Watch it, buddy.
But if you drink, I did. I'm just saying. You got to stay focused.
You know, I like Indian food better.
But, you know, a lot of people look at it as all fun and games. Well, it's not. I mean,
well, from the physical aspect, but from the spiritual too, you need to be on the same page.
Yeah.
And that's what makes a home. And that's from the fleshly, carnal aspect of life, because we're flesh. We have that aspect. But there's a spiritual side that we need to be putting together too.
Go ahead.
Well, as parents, let me go back just a little bit. From World War II is where things started falling apart.
Sure.
The women left the homes. Other people started raising the kids. You don't eat as a family. On the whole, society, they don't eat one meal together at all. They don't function as a family. But that's where we need to bring our families together. We need to teach our children that, number one, it's not about me. It's not about them. They don't get to run the house. We have to teach those God-given obligations and rules and things that He sets.
You're getting into my fourth lesson, but go ahead.
In order not to downplay, give the family no worth, the marriage no worth.
Okay.
You have to keep that worth.
And you're right. This did start during World War II out of pure necessity. Women had to work in factories and things like that to provide for the war effort and all that. So it was kind of out of necessity. The problem is when that came to an end, when the war came to an end, and all of our military people started coming home, we didn't go back to where we were. It stayed on that. So it did make a difference. And no, we don't, unfortunately, in many homes today, they don't sit down and have meals together to sit down and talk about, mundane things to some people, like how was your day? How'd school go? I heard from the teacher that, or something like that. We don't see that too much anymore.
Get off social media.
Yeah, Raphael?
Yeah, no, just something briefly. I'm glad I let you come in first. That's very good.
Thank
comment.
You.
But the only thing I want to say is, commitment is a key ingredient. But also, just commitment for the sake of commitment is not going to be a happy marriage necessarily. Mm-hmm. You need to have a high standard, a quality of marriage. That's why Peter speaks of, husbands treat your wives a weaker vessel. So commitment is more enjoyable when there's a quality of marriage that God expects.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a combination, I would say. It's sad, but some, couples just stay together just for staying together. Maybe that was used to be in older generations. Doesn't matter the way he treats me, I'm going to stay here, and because that's the way I was raised, just to stick with it no matter how he treats me. And that's good, but if there's the standard of quality that God demands of us, it makes that commitment just enjoyable, and time is going to just go by fast.
Yeah, and it goes back to putting God first. If both parties are putting God first, then you're not going to have the mistreatment. because they're going to be ruling their lives by God's inspired word and how we treat each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you don't get in those situations where somebody stays because they have to stay. So,
I've seen this across the whole spectrum of relationships. Man's relationship with God and man's relationship in marriage. When I say man in general, human beings, you will only treat a person as well as you see them.
Mm-hmm.
And so your picture of God is how you're going to treat your fellow man, your spouse, even yourself.
Correct.
And so you can tell when a person is not in tune with God. We can lie, we can cover it up, we can say, nah, she's all right, he's all right. His or her view of God is how they're going to treat their spouse and how they're going to treat their fellow man, period.
Yeah.
And so that's why you got to stay up there as much as you can, because if you get down here, you're not going to treat your spouse right.
Okay.
You get up here, you treat them right.
Well, and doesn't that go back to Matthew 6:33? Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. When we put God first and foremost in our life, this is something that a lot of people don't understand, is your wife or your husband, if you're putting God first, before you put God first, you may have them on this level and think they're as high as you can possibly treat them, the best you can possibly treat them. When you put yourself up here and start seeking God first, you'll find out that you're elevating your spouse.
Sure.
You know, that you'll never have that relationship with your spouse that you're supposed to have until you're up here putting God first, and then you can look down and say, okay, I understand how I can better treat my husband or better treat my wife. Anything else? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Had some excellent comments. Appreciate it.